So today we have with us Lozen as a guest. We have Bob Alou, he's with us today as well. And then, of course, our attorney. So we have minutes to adopt. We have two sets of minutes. Minutes of the Volunteer Fire Department Pension Board for August 16th and as well as August 23rd. So if I can hear a motion to adopt the minutes.
Question on
that.
Okay. On the August 16th minutes. On the second page, on the minutes approved, it says, board member Esposito noted that Mr. Wilson had nominated Mr. Esposito as chairman at the last meeting. Does that make any sense?
Those were corrections.
This is a correction.
To the minutes from that previous set.
When did Mr. Wilson nominate me for president?
I don't remember that happening,
is what I'm saying.
Tim initially had nominated you as chairman, and then there was not a second to that nomination.
Actually, the correction should have been there was after nomination for chairman, and then I nominated for Mr. Esposito for vice chair. And then Mr. Esposito declined.
Okay. And legal review. There's a comment here, and I don't remember going through it. Which whether the insurance coverage is applicable to a volunteer firefighter association, whether the association of the volunteer firefighters qualifies as a corporation. When did we have that?
At one point during the discussion, you were talking about a Delaware corporation.
Yeah.
And that's how I.
Yes. I think it may have been during the discussion on the cancer presumption bill. I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Mm-hmm. So there was a question about whether or not under a corporation or an association.
Well, right. I think the question was how that bill would be interpreted.
Right, how it will apply to, whether it applies to this fund or not.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is that's the first time that I can recall that we concerned about whether we were a corporation or an association. I thought we were a corporation, so why the question that is what I asked. Okay, but if it came up as a part of the conversation, then it's part of the minutes. Fine, okay. That's all I think.
You can always listen to it, Charlie, if you have any questions.
Any other discussion? So I'd like to make a motion to accept the minutes. The two dates.
I'll move to accept the minutes.
Second.
All right, financial status of plan accounts.
For the quarter ending September 30th, this is the report. You started with a balance ending June 30th of $4,348,544. You received your fire insurance premium tax of $247,471.42. You had investment earnings for the quarter of $27,260.80. Pension distributions totaled $33,938.04. And you had administrative expenses in the quarter of $7,920.45. So your total cash and investment balance as of September 30th is $4,581,418.14. There are three invoices that will require approval. Those invoices are on the financial report. They are for two are for Sugarman and Susskind, one in the amount of $595. One in the amount of $1,651.18, and an invoice for Foster and Foster for $3,500. All of those invoices are attached in your report.
Make a motion to accept it.
Second.
Okay. The financial report is, and you want to have your invoices approved as well? And your motion?
Yeah.
Okay. So financial report accepted and invoices for payment approved. Second thing on finance is there was a question in retention for volunteer pension documents that are going to be on the website, and I believe we got the answer for that last week, which was good. Any discussion for that?
How many years do we need to keep this kind of question?
Was that your inner voice?
I'm sorry.
David, I'm curious how many years we had to keep. I understand the reporting requirement, but I'm wondering how many years we need up there.
I mean, so each use for what has to go on the website, it's mentioned like the last year or it might say the last 5 years, so it's that time period. But that's different, of course, from the records retention. Like for instance, on the website, you have to have the administrative expenses report. It's the most recent.
Okay.
And I believe that. So there's some, one of the items has to be up there is the last 5 years, I believe.
The rate of return, right?
Right.
Okay, but for financial statements and stuff, the current year?
Right.
Okay.
Right. The most recent.
Thank you.
You're
welcome.
Any other questions on that? All right, so legal review.
Okay. The only thing we have is this is the firefighter cancer presumption bill that basically would incorporate into our plan the requirements of the cancer presumption law, assuming that it applies to this plan. And unfortunately, I can't tell you how. Right now, whether or not it will be interpreted as applying to a volunteer plan or not, the bill defines firefighter as an individual employed as a full-time firefighter within the fire department or public safety department of the city. Whether or not the courts will interpret that to include volunteer firefighters, we can't say right now.
So looking at the bill, and I went through the legislation, mm-hmm. and I noticed that Part B states that employer has the same meaning as 112.1.
Right.
So employer obviously would dictate this organization. But the definition of firefighter mm-hmm. is different in this bill than it is in the 112.191.
Right.
So it specifically says firefighter means an individual employed as a full-time firefighter within the fire department or public safety department, or as an employer, the primary responsibility is prevention and extinguishment of fires.
Right.
So that is, to me, that's clear that it's a full-time firefighter. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go back to 112.191, under firefighter, it actually says in the last line, or volunteer firefighter.
Right.
This one does not have that.
Right.
So obviously, because if they would have referenced that one exactly, I think they would have just said the same as in 112.191.
Right.
So
they did for employer, but they did not for fire.
So I think that means it's a new definition on a new statute, right?
It could, I mean, it could be, it's difficult to say, it could be simply what's the word I'm looking for, it could be just an inadvertent omission.
They're not allowed to have omissions.
Unfortunately, they do all the time.
What's actually the wrong definition of firefighter?
There's so many definitions. There's a definition of 185 that does include volunteers.
No, I'm not talking about the volunteer aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the qualification as a firefighter. In other words, fire police are covered under the umbrella and are classified as firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And does that have to be reflected in there? Or if it's not reflected in there, what does that mean then with respect to us determining that firefighters.
Well, I think that's a different discussion. I think specifically we're talking about the new legislation.
Yeah, I understand that.
Senate Bill 426. So I think that if we read what is written, mm-hmm. it does not include mm-hmm. volunteers. You know, and I think I'm not trying to say it doesn't, but I'm just trying to follow the law. And it also states that you have to work continuously as a firefighter for 5 years, you know, under that same provision.
Right.
So, and the question for that is the retirement portion. Like, how do we, because it is a pension board or a pension item, what's responsible? And then there's a definition for that as well, but it has to do just with cancer. So, I mean, as far as definition of firefighter, fire police, that's another item. Mm-hmm. But I think for Senate Bill 426, we're just trying to find out how far do we have to go into
Right.
You know, being compliant with it.
Right.
So.
And we could, I mean, we, there's a couple of questions. One, you know, fortunately so far we haven't had a case that's been brought to us, but if we did, if a case were brought to us, then we would have to decide ourselves whether whether we must comply with that section or not. And then this is just a question of whether or not we incorporate into our plan the language from the statute. And we could sort of err on the side of caution, bring it into the plan, or propose the ordinance, and then let the city attorney decide whether or not the city believes that that volunteer firefighters would be covered under it. But at least we've done our job of proposing it.
I know the discussions didn't happen in great depth with that, because they read the language was full-time within the fire department.
Right.
Employed full-time, and then employed meaning, you know, paycheck.
Employed,
benefits,
right,
you know,
in the normal sense of employed. Right.
Right. So,
if we accept that, does that confuse our definition of firefighter?
I think if we specifically are asking questions about this bill...
Yeah, I know. We're talking about incorporating the bill into our ordinance, I believe. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay,
and,
seriously.
And in doing that, then we have two definitions of flyby.
That's not necessarily problematic, because we're talking about... we would have the two definitions of firefighter, but drawn from two different statutes that themselves have two different definitions. So it's following. It would be if we considered that this presumption bill applies to this fund, then it would be by obligation that we would be following a second definition of firefighter just for the purposes of the cancer presumption.
Okay.
Can I have a question.
We've been in the process of putting out impact statements for the cancer presumption, even in advance of ordinances. So, question primarily for you, Dave, would you recommend we hold off on producing an impact statement pending a resolution to this?
I think first the board has to decide today whether we want to even propose it to the city. For adoption, and then, so I don't think we really need to commit to an impact statement at this time, because even if we decide to go forward with it, I imagine the city attorney's going to have some analysis.
Part of what to do. The city will probably want to know is, what would the cost impact be? It would be nothing to the city. There would be a small increase in the total contributions needed, maybe $1,000. It's very small. The plan is heavily overfunded. So if part of the checklist going down for the city attorney to consider and the board, there would be no cost impact to the plan. So we'll hold off on doing an impact statement, and we'll wait to let this work its way through.
That's great. Thanks. And it could be that it may be, I mean, it's really kind of three possible scenarios. One is that the bill just doesn't apply. Two, it does apply. Three, we decide to adopt this language and we begin to create our own sort of jurisprudence just based upon the language in our plan, regardless of the application of the bill.
I mean, personally, I think that I'm okay on erring on the side of caution, presenting it, and I mean, this is the city attorney says, hey, let's shoot it down, let's shut down. You know, doesn't apply. But at least we did our due diligence. And what are your thoughts on this?
I don't know how you make a decision on it. If you asked me, what should we do? I would say to you, I don't know what to do.
Right.
Well, and what options do we have? You say we don't want to incorporate this. Is that the last word on it?
No, not necessarily. The city and the city can still go ahead with incorporating something on its own, but so it wouldn't necessarily be the last word on it.
Well, how about your firm? Do they have a position that would...
Right now, our position for the volunteer plans is to propose it. And basically on two grounds. One, that it's just, that it may apply, so we want to have it in there. And two, we'll leave it to the cities to decide. The city attorney could decide it doesn't apply, but just to extend, but we're going to voluntarily extend the coverage to our volunteer firefighters.
If they meet the criteria.
That's right.
Right. And there's a lot of criteria. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the plain language of the statute seems to say that there's no, doesn't apply to it.
I would say that you're certainly under no obligation right now, mainly because we're not obligated to have this language in our ordinance anyway. It's just a sort of to have our ordinance reflect what the bill says. But if the bill applies to us, we're required to comply with that bill, regardless of whether we have the language in our ordinance or not. So
it's a matter of being proactive or reactive.
That's right.
Benny, you're also quiet over there.
I'm trying to filter all this stuff out. I'm a bottom line guy, you know. It's trying to project things.
Well, what do we have to do right now?
Absolutely nothing.
No.
Absolutely nothing.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I think it would be a good incentive to for getting more volunteers involved with the fire department. But if we're not required to do anything, then you're reactive.
Okay. I mean, the advantage I see of going ahead and proposing it is that we'll get immediately the city attorney's analysis on it. And it will know. And if the city attorney says, no, we don't believe that it applies, and we want to go along with that, then we'll let Doug know that actuarially we should consider that, and we'll go forward operating the plan as though the bill doesn't apply.
That would be your recommendation?
Yes.
I would lean on that. And in that relationship, a second opinion on what the city stance is. But we're bored.
So we have to do nothing now. No motions or anything else.
No, that would be that motion then would be to propose it to the city and then let the city do its analysis.
Which means then we favor.
Yes.
But if we propose it and then they come back and say it's not relevant to your, or it doesn't apply, then it just goes away. So there's no change. But if they do, and they translate it as it is, some sort of commitment to us, then we're prepared.
So if we accept it, we have not accepted anything that we don't want.
No. We can't, because we can't put it in the plan anyways. All we can do is propose.
Okay. And the only commitment, I don't know if you've ever looked through the bill, but the only commitment is... The Section B states the employer or employers participating in the retirement plan or system are solely responsible for the payment of the contributions necessary to fund the increased actuarial costs associated with implementation of the presumptions under paragraph 3 and 4, respectively, that cancer has, or the circumstances arise out of the treatment of cancer, have either rendered the firefighter totally and permanently disabled or resulted in death. So for us to look into their retirement and it's going to affect us, a firefighter would have to get cancer technically on the job. Mm. It's presumed that it was on the job if they get one of the 21 cancers listed. Mm-hmm. And then if they do receive that cancer, then it's considered that permanently disables them or results in death. Then we would actuarially, I believe, be responsible to make their pensions whole to their families. And that's all it's so
paper.
Right. And then on the city's behalf, I know that the city is responsible for a lot more than that. So they're responsible for a first-time initial payment, medical costs, and then pensions on their side. So, but for us, if it applied to us, and it could be presumed that it would be because they were a volunteer, one, they would have to be here 5 years continuously, you know, and then two, they would have to meet the criteria. So. But nothing's impossible. So. So I would like to propose that we at least present it to the city attorney for review.
I'll second.
All in favor?
One.
I'm sorry, who made the motion?
I'm not allowed to make motions.
No, you're not.
Okay. So I would like to... I didn't make a motion, I proposed it.
Okay, so who made the motion?
I'll make it.
Okay.
You can make a motion.
Chairman?
We don't have... Yeah, our procedures don't require strict adherence to the Robert Rules of Order, so we can... Chair can make.
So I make the motion.
Okay.
Mr. DeVita seconded.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
No. No opposed? Seeing none, carries. Yes, a good one. Jeremy, I'm going to back up real quick and go back into finance. Did you want to contribute anything to, as far as the league's position on the state financial statement? I apologize, I forgot you were on the phone.
No, not at all. My contribution will be small, but maybe helpful in the sense that we did get our 930 numbers in, which I don't think are in your report. We just don't have the big 150-page insomnia cure. All of that's just not quite finished, but I can tell you what the fiscal year return is, which is 5.4%. So we were up, I think that put us up roughly about 70 basis points for the last quarter. So just if you're kind of wondering where we fall this year in relation to your assumed rate, the final year number again would be 5.4%.
So if our assumption is 7%, is that something we need to look at or just ride the wave?
A couple thoughts on that. One, 5.4% versus 7 typically is not going to make a big wave as it relates to your contribution rate. So I wouldn't expect that just by itself to be a big deal. The other part being, and I can't remember how your actuary does it, a smoothing technique.
Yes.
Is used most of the time, and I'm assuming you all are using one.
He's shaking his head yes.
Usually it's a 3, 4, 5. Oh, is your actuary there right now?
He is.
Let me defer to him then. He would probably be a better answer that, because I'm thinking 14, 15, depending upon how many years he goes back, could be falling off. So you might actually even see a boost because that was a flat year. But he could probably better speak to that than I could.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The plan's still overfunded. In fact, I'm going to bring up discussion of assumptions during my presentation today. I think we have room to get the investment assumption down to a good, decent, long-term level. No funding impact to the city, and we'll have a discussion on that. There's no immediacy on it, but there's no reason not to get down into the sixes, I think, for a plan that's overfunded.
Jeremy, have anything else?
I don't, because unfortunately, just kind of as an FYI to the board, to a little insight into how we work. Each quarter after we get all of the numbers in, as far as the plan's returns, but then our consultant takes all those numbers, takes all the data, puts all the manager performance in line, then they take it and they go out and they do a comparison against the indexes, but also peer groups. So our consultant is the one who prepares all of this, does all this. So after that's done each quarter and they get those big, long reports finished up, then I get on the phone with them and we talk about each individual manager and how the portfolio as a whole performs. And we're actually doing that on Monday. So your all's meeting just happened to fall. We didn't get these numbers in until the beginning of this week. So you all just kind of fell right in timeline where we have the latest numbers, but I don't have any of the information to kind of give you of why things went the way they did for the quarter and any outlook for, you know, the next couple quarters or anything that our consultant's looking at or recommending. I just, unfortunately, because of the timing of it, I won't have that information until Monday morning. So I don't have a lot else to contribute other than just that final number. But that's how it works each quarter, and where how we get our information. And when I'm presenting it to you, that's where it's coming from.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So moving forward, under legal review again, 2020, item number 5, volunteer firefighter pension board meeting dates at City Hall. Everyone have a chance to review the dates for 2020.
Are they in the packet? I'd like
They were an agenda item.
The dates are in the packet.
Yeah, it's
in
the agenda.
Page 37.
Page 37 in the package.
Page
37.
Oh, 37.
February 14th, May 15th, August 14th, and November 13th.
That's consistent with what we've been doing.
Yeah. So I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the dates.
I make a motion to approve.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I can check my calendar.
Yeah,
okay.
Check the calendar.
Favor, the dates carry for 2020. All right, so we'll move on to new business. So item number 6, discussion of increased amount, but we'll let Doug do his actuarial presentation first and then go into the items. That's okay.
Yes, we will have the valuation and the GASB schedules out in December. The city has requested. The city sent us data, so we're on track for that.
We appreciate that.
When I'll present the results at the February meeting, we can have a formal discussion at that point, but I've put off for a number of years doing a formal experience study, which is reviewing all of your assumptions, just because we had to lower the investment assumption and the plan was still overfunded, but auditors and those who look at the governmental accounting schedules, they like to see a formalized reason for why we're using assumptions. So we need to give them the experience. You have high turnover, and being so overfunded, there was no reason under when GASB was simpler to say, well, we're using, they're all conservative assumptions. But I will recommend at the February meeting and get board approval to do a formal experience study and come back later next year and give you the results of that. I think what will end up happening is your plan will just be in even more overfunded status because the turnover is so high here, we're going to adopt a more realistic turnover assumption. And that will enable us to lower the investment assumption. And we'll want to work with the League of Cities in that as the consultant. But when I see a plan overfunded, there's no reason to not just get ahead of the trend that's going on across the country. I think these defined benefit plans are going to be getting into the sixes. The Florida retirement system keeps lowering the assumption. They just lowered it again, now down to 7.2, and their actuary is recommending getting into the mid to high sixes. So we might as well, with an overfunded plan like this, just get right there fairly quickly. But we can have a fuller discussion of that when I'm here in February. But I will advise there will be no funding. The city will never owe anything to this plan unless the state money dries up. State money is taking care of everything. So that's that part on the assumption. So let me know when you want to talk about the $65 and also about the use of state money. Okay. It's up to you, the board direction on what kind of study you want us to see. The benefit rate we all know is $65 per year of credit service or per year of credit service paid monthly as the retirement benefit. You can increase it pretty much to anything you want because the plan's overfunded. So you just need to give me some sense of what different scenarios do you want to... What makes sense to me is look at a 70 and a 75 because you can extrapolate that. If you pick one, let's say we pick a 70 and it costs X dollars, and you say, well, we like 75, you would double the impact. It's a pretty simple exercise. So it's really what's it's you can you have the freedom, knowing it's not going to impact your funding. You'll have the freedom to negotiate between the volunteers and the city for, you know, what is the happy, you know, what is the happy amount to keep getting volunteers working for the city. I will show that on the city's financial statements, if they do pass it, the increase in the dollar amount they have to book as a liability in the first year, as it's like you just bought a new house and you here's the dollar value of the house and you book it on the city's financial statements. But the plan in overall is a credit to the city. It's so heavily overfunded, they keep booking a negative liability every year. It's like a credit. So if the city would agree to pass a benefit enhancement in that first year, you get the city would get less of a credit on the financial statements. But understanding there's no dollar outlay needed from the city for whatever. Now, I would say, look, if you wanted to make $1,000, okay, well, but we know that's not going to be proposed. So. So any questions on that, on the benefit rate on the $65? We'll just need direction on a couple of different scenarios, and I can be prepared to run that after we do the 19 valuation. Well, we'll have that out in December, but I'll be here in February to present the results, and then I can have the study with me at the February meeting to go over. So you kind of tell me, do you want to see just a couple of scenarios, like maybe a 75 and something else?
Yeah, this came up. So right now, as you said, we have a high turnover. So we're trying to focus. We're about to start a recruitment campaign of some sort to recruit volunteers that technically don't want to go into the internship program, and which is a job path. So our high turnover is based on that job path. So just because they're leaving the volunteers doesn't mean they're not being a city employee or that, you know, they're going somewhere on a career path is what they're looking for. So we're going to be focusing on trying to retain or get new volunteers that would be, so we're trying to just sweeten the pot, I guess, so people that are going to commit to 5 years for us and things like that, because we can't just always recruit interns because, you're going to get down to nobody who's going to run the organization. So so that's why this conversation is kind of taking place, because it's been so many years, I believe it was 8, if I remember correctly, since we've even looked at the number, maybe 10. But that's why the conversation came place. And I know that if we look at surrounding counties, we are above those, or not counties, but stations, and then one of them actually has dissolved. You know, Bunnell has dissolved as a volunteer organization. So, and we don't want that to be the trend here because we have a good working program. So, so as far as a rate, I could bring it to the membership, talk to them at the December meeting, and then let you know. And
okay.
You can bring back whatever they say on
sure.
February. And I think that would probably be a good step in that way. I mean, because I can easily say, yeah, do 75, do 80, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
It's really what the membership's going to want. So,
okay.
Any thoughts on this, guys?
Well, up to this point, we resisted. And I'm not saying it's the right thing to do at this stage. Mm-hmm. But we resisted the increase of the defined benefit truly at the recommendation of the city's finance department. If you remember, Chris Quinn was always afraid that if he brought an increase to that, to the council, that they would start to get goosey because they would look at it as their liability to this program increases. Now, albeit that they have the ability and the right cancel this program anytime you want. First time they have to lay out a dollar, they get there, drop the curtain.
They don't even have to wait.
Yeah. So, you know, do you have any recommendations? Do you have any concerns?
I think that if really hasn't been looked at, not having the background, but if it really hasn't been looked at in 8 years, you know, I think it's a good idea to look at where it should be, what's the impact, mm-hmm. and have the different scenarios that we can look at. I understand it's going to affect the asset that the city reports on their financial statements, But if we have, by, you know, what the amounts are going to be, what's the probability that, you know, this increase will set us to where we will have to do a contribution by the city in the future, and also outline, if it gets below this certain point, does it revert back to the $65, or does it get analyzed every 3 years? You know, do it, but do it with a plan so that we can monitor the numbers, and if it gets below that certain area, then we know we need to look at it again. Am I making sense?
Absolutely.
I am conservative, and I understand the conservative approach, but you also have to manage the conservative with offering to the plan members. Mm-hmm. So in order to make an educated decision, we need the different options.
So if you did that and you were satisfied with it, you would carry the water to the city council?
Well, it would be presented to city council as a
well,
recommendation.
They're going to look at you and say,
yes.
You know.
They love money. That's okay. Just kidding.
Oh, they don't?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't talk to them. I don't know. So.
But it is a decision at this board if you want to spend the funds to go through the study. But if it really hasn't been looked at in 8 years,
yeah,
you have to.
I like that. I like the fact that if we look at the numbers and then we decide every third year we'll review it and look at the numbers again, I think that would be a lofty future.
And what does it do for your members if it has to be decreased? What would be the effect of them?
Okay.
You know,
if what number has to be decreased, the defined benefit?
Yeah, if we increase it, let's say for the next 3 years, and then the economy changes, the revenue and the interest isn't coming in because we've seen some decline, and we have seen some decline in the insurance money coming from the state. We didn't get the second distribution that we usually get. We didn't get it this year, so it was lower than last year. So was the interest. So if, you know, there is a slowdown and we see a decline, what does it mean to go back to them and say, we're going back to the 65? Is that, you know, is that something that will be accepted well, or is it going to affect the morale?
Well, that should be a part of the proposal.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt your plan.
The caveats.
Yeah.
Those are all, that'd be part of that, you know, mm-hmm. educated decision package.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll do that. I'll present it in December to the membership.
Okay.
And get a feel for where everyone is on it. And then we'll go from there. And I'll get you the information right after that meeting, and then you can bring it back to February.
Sure.
And we'll have another discussion.
Okay.
Okay. Perfect. Any other questions or discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Going back to the minutes, this topic was discussed, I guess, in the August 23rd meeting. August 16th. And it says here in the minutes, anyway, discussion regarding increasing monthly contributions to the membership and to increase annually based on cost of living adjustment. And I'm assuming that we're saying that the monthly contributions would increase every year based on the cost of living situation adjustment. I'll be quite frank, I don't remember this at the meeting.
We had a lengthy discussion about it. I just brought up an idea of increasing the defined benefit, and I said, and maybe proposing, you know, a kind of a cost of living adjustment to that, so we don't have to keep revisiting. But I like the idea of revisiting every third year over a cost of living increase. You know, but that was just discussion.
No, but it's the baseline for where we're going now, and I think it's a worthy enterprise.
Sure.
However, a question is, if we do that, and it's based partially upon cost of living adjustment, whom does this apply to within the organization? Retired, unretired,
I think the current conversation doesn't involve a cost of living increase. it would involve the board reviewing the defined benefit.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it was discussed, and it was saying you're right, not considering that.
Moving forward, it said we would discuss this with Doug and financing, and so and I think that's where we are. So nothing's proposed on a cost of living. It was just an idea. And I think we've right now we've birthed past that idea. So, but I think an annual adjustment, I think a lot of factors now come into it now that I've heard finance side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So an annual adjustment probably is not worthy or even feasible.
Well, what triggered me says discussion regarding increasing monthly contributions to the members and to initiate on top of that an annual increase based on the cost of living adjustment. But I just wanted to know. So there's no decision made on that.
There's no decision made on that.
Yeah. All right. Now, how are you going to propose it to the membership?
Just what we discussed now. We said, you know, we're looking at a defined benefit increase. What are everybody's thoughts? Can't tell the membership what the thinkers to say. I can ask their
no, but you can tell them what you're thinking. And what you're saying, do we know what we're going to tell them on what we're proposing? And you're comfortable with that? I have no problem. But it seems to me, if you were proposing it to me, you would have to know first what you're proposing so that you have a rational discussion with people who are able to understand what it is you're proposing, having not been here listening to all the preamble.
So do you like Foster and Foster to run the numbers first and then propose it to them? Is that what you're saying?
I think we ought to have an idea of what we want to propose. Let's Foster and Foster learn.
Well, Foster and Foster wants to propose $1,000 a month.
Be just a 6 month program.
I heard you choke.
Yeah, we have additional
qualifiers.
I think
you're right. I mean, right now we're proposing we're shooting fish in a barrel and asking, you know, hey, where do you want to be? Essentially,
yeah. But I think maybe we should be having that discussion among the board first, and then key him to do something.
Jesus,
I get you
home. Well, so, yeah.
Put your pencil down. Well, let's have the discussion. We're having a discussion. Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
I would, Doug, what we do have the $6,000 accrued benefit per year of service limit under the code. How does that, are we anywhere near that?
Well, right now? I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's that limitation is just how much can be taken out of the trust fund annually between the share and the defined benefit. And to the extent you hit that limit, it just rolls over into the next year. We just keep rolling over the share monies. What happens is, what's being discussed here is we have a private ruling determination. And if you increase the defined benefit and the share monies are still coming in a fairly decent clip, then increasing the defined benefit will require more people hitting limitations each year to end that maximum amount they can draw from the trust in total. And it would just require more rollovers into the following year for share distributions. It won't limit what people can get in total, just defers.
If I remember, I'm trying to think, but it was $3,000 per year.
It was $3,000
per month per year, which is a $36,000 annual cap, I believe, in total. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, the defined benefit, I mean, you're at 780, I think it is, something like that. So
it was more of an issue with the initial allocation when there's that huge pot of share monies that were being sent out.
Anything that went over, I know it went over a couple of years out to people.
So yeah, I don't think there's many, if any, left.
About 3 years.
Still.
No matter what was owed, it took about 3 years.
Right. True. So.
The COLA discussion is always interesting, and I would definitely even push even more if you wanted to go for a COLA to lower the investment assumption, because really a COLA is sort of a put option against the investment return. it's like watering down your future expected income. I would advise if providing any kind of a proposed COLA would get anywhere near a funding requirement, I don't think it would. So it's more from plan design. You know, do you want to reward? You got to be careful in who you want to reward with COLAs. You'd probably want to, if you wanted to go that route and just start thinking about it, probably target just people who put in a full service career. You don't want people vesting, just barely making it to vesting and then going to work for Flagler or Ormond and then coming back 20 years down the road and drawing a benefit that gets a COLA bump. So you probably want to give somebody who works a minimum number of years to get it. Also, COLA in the books in the first year is going to be more of a hit against that credit the city's been taking. Because COLAs are expensive, usually. Here, it wouldn't be expensive because I would tell you, don't do a COLA that gets anywhere close to the city requiring a funding requirement. But where it gets a little tricky is if you build in certain promised increases in the future, we want to make sure that there's a way to shut it off legally in case the state monies dry up. And there's different opinions on COLAs and whether you can shut them off and to whom you can shut them off once they're in the plan. So there's a little more risk introducing a COLA in the event that the state dollars dry up in the future. So I know I kind of threw a bunch of different things up at the same time, but you probably get my sense is you can afford it, be careful in who you want to give it to, and it does make the plan a little riskier for having a funding requirement in the future.
I don't like the word risk.
Yeah, that's why I listen to the audience here. I know Palm Coast. That's why I'm sure to address everything.
And I think the council is a conservative council. So if we're coming in with you were increasing the risk of the plan, that may be a red flag.
Yeah. Dave, what's the prospect on reducing or eliminating the COVID?
How it can be done legally?
Yeah.
It depends on who it was extended to originally, but essentially for any years of service that someone is working while the COLA is in the plan, it has to be recognized for those years. Retirees, when it's given to retirees after they've already retired. It's a bit of a gray area whether or not you can take it away.
But you can stop giving it.
You
can't necessarily take it away, but you can stop increasing it.
Yes.
Does that mitigate the risk?
Well, you can always mitigate, but the introduction of a COLA itself introduces risk.
And we could structure the COLA in such a way that it has certain conditions of when it would be payable, certain actuarial conditions on when it would be payable.
But the COLA wouldn't change the defined benefit, would it?
No. Well,
it's on top of it.
It depends on how it's drafted.
It would change how much you end up drawing out in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's drafted as a third benefit, as a 13 check or a COLA, and so whether or not that is added sort of to the COLA basis for the next year.
But since you're not increasing the defined benefit, but you're supplementing it because of the COLA, or with the COLA, you could stop it at any time. If it were so written. What I'm suggesting or thinking about here is extending some, if we're going to deal with COLA, some kind of an increase to the retired guys.
There was a case, I believe it was in 2014 or 15, dealing with it. I think it was with the Florida retirement system, where the court went back and sort of. did an analysis, did an examination of all of Florida pension law as it relates to COLAs. And there's still sometimes a lot of unanswered questions. So it's a bit of a what legally you can change. It's not easy to say.
I think that another thing is just the public relations of it. Once people are used to having extra money, and coming, you've got a real problem when you say, "Whoop, I'm sorry, we have to take back." Very hard, and that's something what I'll call a public relations problem that we could get into.
But take what back?
Well, here you're saying that you're going to give, and then if things go south in the economy and markets, that we now have to take the COLA back.
You mean not distribute any further COLA? You're not going to take any money back from anybody, I don't think.
Well, people think that that's going to go on.
Well, we got that with the share plan. Sometimes it's written, you get it or you don't get it, depending upon what the surplus is.
Yeah, there is, and I understand, because I've been here for a long time as actuary, and I've listened to everybody over the years, and I think I understand what Chris's position was earlier, is don't put things necessarily on the radar that don't need to be put on the radar. And COLAs are one of those things that for people who are opposed to defined benefit plans, they immediately notice. And if you start getting certain citizens interested, they might start asking questions of council, and council's like, well, wait, why are we being asked about pension here? It doesn't cost anything. And if you do something that potentially puts council on the defensive with the public, you might risk the other things that are in place right now. And this is me not talking so much as an actuary, it's just as an experienced consultant paying attention over the years, 20 plus years with these types of plans, is I like to advise not just on the actuarial side, but on the unrelated things, because it's in everybody's interest to keep the plan going in a nice, stable way without necessarily introducing things that cause the sponsor to be worried.
So overall, I think the consensus of the COLA is very risky. It's going to put Helena uneasy. It's going to put the council uneasy. You know, especially even though it's fully funded. But like to Mr. Schroeder's point, is what happens down the road in 10 years if the city count or state money's dry up? And we say, just kidding, you're not getting any more.
Well, it's not just the state money. It's also a question that. We just heard that the fund is supposedly earning 5.3%. And, our actuarial assumption is what?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. And when I look at long-term rates in bonds and whatnot, and granted we have an investment pile there that is diversified, but 7 is a real stretch in this world right now, and it's likely to be a real stretch for a long period of time. Okay, I don't expect to see that, not even in my portfolio. And so at some point, you basically are telling people they're getting more than they possibly can. Okay, that's a real problem. Okay, and those are problems that have surfaced in lots of other communities, like the state of Illinois, Chicago, where I'm from, and that's not a pretty sight up there.
have the same kind of concern with the sheriff, right? To the extent that we wrote in very specifically, if there's no money there, you get nothing. And nobody had any problem with that. Hi. I'm done.
I've been collecting a pension from the Steamfit as local in New York City for the last 15 years. And I've never gotten an increase. I've never had a voice opinion to make an increase. It is what it is. That's it. It's guaranteed for the rest of my life and my wife's life. So it's, that's it. I don't know. No magic, no mirrors, no smoke. It is what it is. And I think their total is like 34, 35 million in their pension plan. That's what they, and they're the assets. And I get a statement every quarter as well. And I'm looking at it, I'm starting to learn what these things are. Because it affects me. But I've never got a rate increase. And then there's probably 11,000 members that are retired right now. And it is what it is. That's it. If it dries up, it dries up.
As a private fund?
No, it's state of New York.
State of New York.
It's through the state
so
of New York.
So obviously it's not funded.
Obviously it's not.
Okay.
But that's also,
I get a check every month.
No, you do, but yeah. The taxpayers are paying it. That's what's coming out of it. That's beside the point.
Yeah, but the working members are paying it as well. So.
But that's a full-time, you had a full-time job for many
years.
That's what it says. Yeah. So flip side of that coin is this is a volunteer plan and no one gets a paycheck. So, so any other discussion on this? Or?
Well, how are we going to proceed here?
Talk to the membership on the 2nd and feel them out. I mean, obviously they come back and say, I propose $150 a month. It's not realistic, you know, but I don't know. I'm okay with the board just picking a few dollars and giving them to Doug and look at the numbers and go from there. I mean, like you said, it's a pretty easy formula. You know?
Mm-hmm. If you do prior to going to the membership.
I think that what we need to take to the membership is the vote, you know, and say, hey, we adopt this, we don't. I was just
in concept.
In concept.
And at the next meeting or whatever, after the board meets on this here, then we will propose to you the amounts that we're talking about.
We should let the members know what the amounts
are. Right? I mean, remember when?
If you want actuarial numbers, we can just say, hey, bring us numbers back for $75, you know, and then we can do the math either way. Or we can propose the membership and see what they think about a number. You know?
What do you think?
I think it'd probably be best to have Doug run a few numbers first so we can, so it's a little bit structured when it goes to the membership.
There you go.
Otherwise, it's going to be all looking good answers that are going to be in.
So, we could have Doug run 70, 75, and then we'll propose it after we receive those numbers back. We won't say anything in December to membership.
Okay.
And we actually propose facts.
All right, I'll run those. I'll do the 19 valuation with GASB. We'll get that out of the city. And afterwards, I'll run the study, and I'll get that study out in advance of the February meeting so y'all can review it.
Okay.
But then I'll be here in February, and I'll go over the results.
Okay.
We have
this.
We
have
this conversation.
Is there a way to find out what
before.
The surrounding area is?
Is
there a way to find out what the what is provided by the surrounding areas as far as
the you're not going to get much.
Well, it's kind of apples to
oranges.
And Flagler is volunteers.
They have a portion, yeah. They do have a pension board as well. Pinnell's gone, they're dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it depends how far you want to go.
We have stripped them a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
the surrounding.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fortunate in that the way the plan was written and the ordinances were written and the way the funding came to us, well, I don't even know how the hell we got so much money, quite frankly. other than by formula on state distribution. Mm-hmm. And you get two checks, the primary and then the supplemental. And the supplemental was a peak. The volunteers only get or can only use 50% of the funds that are provided for pensions for Ponco.
It's based on population, so the city of Palm Coast has a large population.
Yeah, well, yeah, and the number of households, because right. The money really comes from homeowners' policies.
Right.
And I guess
do you want to have Doug run some numbers beforehand? Do you want to have him do like 75, and then also looking at 13 check and COLA? So there's a sort of broader. Our range of possibilities.
I'm real nervous about the COLA, I'll be honest with you. I am, because I'm not trying to walk into council with a big red flag in the air. I'm pretty sure at this point we'll be swinging it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that makes me real nervous. I mean, we can look at numbers, by all means. You know, having proposed, we can look at the numbers. But at the end of the day, you know, you gotta, one, how many eyebrows are going to get raised? And then how much public is going to walk up to that podium. And no matter what we do, there's always public that speaks,
right.
No matter what. So whether they know anything about it or not, nonetheless, it's feedback. And I think, so I'd be real weary of that. If you've experienced counseling, you know how it is. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely okay with running the numbers, you know. I think that's on our agenda today is to discuss the last ordinance we discussed. So if anyone, all right, so Doug's going to do that on defined benefit, and I guess we can have a discussion now on the fluctuating state money conversation.
Yes, it's an easy concept. What's negotiated right now is the city gets an offset of $200K. So whatever the...
What does that mean?
Well, whatever the premium tax monies are distributed each August, the city keeps $200,000 and it stays in the trust fund.
That's cumulative, right? It's brought up to $200,000
every year. So $300,000 comes in, the city gets an offset of $200,000, which provides then the city stays well below ever having a funding requirement, and that $200,000 stays in assets and helps really its excess contributions that helps against adverse experience like poor investment returns.
Exactly. Protect the city during that time.
Yes.
They would use that to fund.
Anything over the $200,000 goes to the share plan, the members get.
Mm-hmm. We have a reserve level of $350,000 with
yes,
the city.
Yes, that was also negotiated a few years back where when the share monies... The monies that have been built up were distributed out, the city reserved back over $300,000, which is just sitting there as a pile of money that the city can draw. We're holding it actually as an offset liability. So in the event you get anywhere close to the city, let's say I come back and say, I don't know what happened, but the city has a funding requirement. They've got $300,000 to draw on. So the negotiated use of state monies right now is $200,000 every year is going in and is staying in the trust fund. The plan right now only needs about $90,000 all in from any sources, which means there's excess contributions going in every year of over $100,000 that is just helping to offset future adverse experience. It's one of the reasons your plan is so overfunded. So I mentioned when I was here earlier this year, I do have one plan that's also overfunded where the city doesn't get, say, $200,000. They get exactly to the dollar what's needed to keep from having a funding requirement. So in this case, we would take about $90,000 in state monies, and everything else would be up for grabs.
So currently, the $200,000 is set aside for the city. And it's cumulative, like you said. Is that correct? So that amount in 5 years is $1 million, and it's never changed, right?
Yeah.
And we have a $300,000+ buffer.
Right.
Right. So this
$200,000 amount is going to continue to rise, and that's why we're at $4.5 million in the fund right now, and that's why we're having this discussion.
Now, I will bring up the risk component again. There's, but it's something that can be shut off. You could come to an agreement, city membership. Okay, fine, we agree. Just give us exactly what we need to stay at zero, and everything else goes to the share plan. There,
this is another way of saying frozen amount.
If you want, yeah. But it's a variable.
We've done away with that terminology.
Yeah,
I don't see
it'd be a variable frozen.
But we increased that reserve amount since I've been here.
Pardon me?
We increased the reserve amount since I've been here because the actuarial study was showing the possibility, right, of a future contribution from the city. I believe the number was like 27,000 and change. So we had to go before city council and increase that amount. And that happened maybe December.
Yeah, there was a small risk.
1 year, I think.
There was a small risk when there was administrative expenses getting the private letter ruling. The actuary and the attorney had a lot of extra billing in that couple of years while that was ongoing. So you were getting kind of maybe a little close. So the risk of putting more into the share is, on an annual basis, really nothing, because if you negotiate that, the city gets exactly what it takes to get to zero, fine. What you're doing then, though, is you're taking monies that are being set aside for future adverse experience, and you're starting to pay those out right now to retirees. That's where the risk is that money's not pooling anymore and getting the investment return. It's being paid out. So there is a little risk to that, that it's like, oh, well, it would have been nice to have even more of a buffer, but we started giving away that buffer. The thing is, right now, you're so overfunded, over $1 million. The question is, would going to an arrangement like this ever introduce risk that has any material? I would say this. If you want to go towards the negotiations discussion of giving the city just exactly what it needs to stay at zero and everything else goes to the share, we lower the investment return assumption a lot. Just get it right down towards six-ish. And I'll want to bring in League of Cities consultant with this, because they might have to change their investment strategy and advise you. You know, they might have to say, we need a lot more in bonds, we need a lot more in fixed. And you're okay with that. But if we want to negotiate giving the city only what it needs to stay at zero and everything else goes to share, I want to be a lot more conservative on the investment return assumption to lower to offset that risk. And then I would say, okay, I'm comfortable now listening to everybody's risk aversion. If we get down towards six, then have at it. Now, that might require that the poll work is not 90,000, maybe it's 150. And so the city gets 150, where it's getting 200 now. So it might be kind of a win-win. We take risk off the table for the investment assumption, lower it, and in exchange, the city says, we'll take exactly what we need to stay at zero, you get the rest for share. That's the direction I would like to go. I would not be comfortable giving the city only exactly what it needs if we didn't also get away from the 7% investment assumption.
What if we did a number plus percentage? Like, hey, we get them.
Yeah, it's just another buffer.
Right,
sure.
You know, just to have a little bit more. But
yeah,
I know when we were the committed dollars. I mean, sometimes they're 140, 150. Well, now they're not anymore. You know, we're now below the 100,000. So that $110,000, it's going to add up so quick, and the amount of reserve money, again, is shooting out of the thing. So that's the only reason why I was having the discussion, is because I think that we're going to have so much excess money that we need to figure out some way to benefit the plan and the members. So.
Yeah, you've got plenty of room to have a negotiation for maybe getting a little bit more to the members where, right, if the city does have a desire to have a volunteer fire plan and they want to, and there may be some concern about retention and getting people here and beefing up that program, it might be time to dig into that huge reserve of money that's in the trust fund and say, look, you can afford, if you've got needs to try and get people here working and staying, because there probably are costs associated with being sort of a training ground. You can help offset those costs by saying, well, we're going to improve. We're going to give a little more in the share. We're going to give a little more in the defined benefit. Okay, where's that fine balance? You have so much reserve right now that I think there's plenty of room to have that discussion. Look at 70, look at 75, look at a little more to the share. And I'll advise if I think, I think the proposal is shifting way too much to the members and the city is a little risk. I think right now the city is sitting on this pile of money and the volunteer fire program is a little bit concerning to maybe the city and the staffing. It's like, we need to stop getting this kind of turnover. The goal is to have more people stay, come and stay. So let's do something to make that happen. We might need to dig into the reserve of money in the trust fund to make that happen.
I know City Council is very big on reserves and fund balance. We have a fund balance policy, and we keep pretty much 20% of our next year's budget in reserves. So to propose using up reserves is going to be an interesting venture, because that's not something that we do even with our city funds. That's why we have disaster reserve funds. So when
if you had to put a percentage on it, what's our percentage in reserve?
I don't know offhand. I know you're like $1 million overfunded based on market assets. It's like $1 million over the value of every future check we think will be cash. It's these are reserves that can only be that are in the trust fund I'm talking about. They can never be released to the general fund unless the city said we're shutting down the volunteer fire plan, pay everybody out, we'll take the difference back. If that's not going to happen, then the reserve I'm talking about can only be used for benefits, and that would be for increasing the 65 and or the share.
So what if we don't have a discussion of using reserves, leave it in there because it's a large amount and then just move forward when things come in?
Well, that's still another concept of using reserves, because you would be utilizing reserve. The reserves would not be growing as much in the future.
You would be
slowing down the growth in reserve is what we're talking about here. Not necessarily tapping in to the reserve that's in hand. Is that you would be slowing down how fast it grows.
Future required dollars.
Yes.
Maintain the current and then reduce. Instead of the 200, reduce that amount.
Yes, because right now your reserve is growing at about 110 a year.
Right.
200 is coming, the city gets, it only needs about 90. So we're talking about, okay, maybe we're sitting on the $1 million extra, leave it, but we're willing to slow down how fast it grows in the future. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Okay. So like Tim said, it could be a required contribution plus
percentage or some
sort of percentage.
Yeah, another buffer.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like what's needed plus 20% or something.
Whatever. And we were always in compliance with your 20% ruling and so forth.
We'll have to get different scenarios.
Yeah.
And so that might be kind of the discussion points to have, and it might satisfy both parties.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make it ugly on paper, pretty for us?
Yes. Absolutely. It's pretty easy. I mean, that part of actuarial math is pretty straightforward that everybody can understand. It's like, well, we need 150, so we'll add 20% to it, and so we'll make it 180. There you go. And you
and
over here are just remeasuring.
Plus the benefit to our community with that shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you're in a great position to have these kind of discussions.
Well, we want to make sure we stay in this great position long term.
Right. Well, that's why I'm laying it all out and listen rather than just, put on the numbers blinders. I listen, I'll advise if I think you're getting anywhere close. I know what the desire here at the city is, so. So that's my 2 cents, so to speak. And we can have more discussion in February.
So you're gonna bring back some defined benefit numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna bring back this fluctuating amount scenario, like something we can look at. Okay. So, hey, if you do this, this is where you'd be.
Actually, I can do that with the valuation.
Okay.
And really, that discussion is going to be more to have in depth once we do the experience study next year.
Okay. And then obviously, we're gonna have a discussion on the. Seven down,
yes, and that'll be with the experience study. So, unfortunately, I think you'll need to see me twice next year, February and probably, like August.
It's not unfortunate, it's a bonus.
The bonus would be the actuary, right? Never heard those two words before.
So, Jeremy, did you hear that Doug's going to be reaching out to you in reference to the assumption rate?
Yes, you're talking about and possible change in your allocation mix?
Yes, because we're probably going to go toward the 6% mark.
Okay.
And so that's what he's looking at, sure. just the mix. Right?
Let me give you a little bit of insight now, if I can.
Okay.
The way we're set up, we have three different portfolio options to choose from, and it's just they're just allocation differences to equity for fixed income. Currently, you all are in the 60% equity mix, which is 60% equity, 30% fixed income, 10% real estate. We also have a 70% equity, which is in 20 fixed income, 10 real estate, and a 50% equity, 40% fixed income, 10% real estate. The way those are designed, so when talking with a consultant, if you were to talk with a consultant, what they're going to tell you is they were set up to achieve essentially three different assumed rate of return. The 70% equity is for a 7.5%, 60% that you all are in is for a 7%, and the 50% allocation is for a 6.5%. Those are the expected long-term returns associated to each of those portfolio options. So that would be, you wouldn't go in and build your own asset mix. Theoretically you can, it's just going to come with some extra costs that I don't think there'd be any reason your plan would want to incur if you said, hey, we want to build something to a, even more specific to a 6% long-term return. We can certainly do that. We can have that conversation. It's just that's not a current option we have without spending the cost to kind of build your own plan, which again, I don't think would probably be overly beneficial. So most likely, if you were going to make any allocation change, it would just go from the 60% that you're in equity that you're in now to down to 50%. And that said, you wouldn't have to make that change, but that would be if you wanted to take on a more conservative investment policy that kind of equates to a new investment return, that would be an option that you could take with us.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Any other discussion? That's a lot of information, I know. All right, so moving on to old business. Number 8, review and discussion proposed changes to the plan. This was the 13th check discussion. Right. So, Charlie, this is your baby.
Yeah. Like the last discussion we had, it was. And maybe it's time to slip this a little bit. Forfeitures. We're looking to take some of that forfeiture money that's being distributed to the active people and take the forfeitures and start to give something back to the retired people. And we wanted to go to Ice Miller to find out what it was we could or couldn't do with respect to making changes that might affect, we didn't know what they would or not, the open letter ruling from the private letter ruling from the IRS. And what I asked Dave to do was to contact the Ice Miller and find out what it is we can or can't do, what violates the IRS rule and all that. And the board felt that, well, Ice Village needed more direction than that. And what was it we were asking them to do? And we said, okay. Dave asked the membership if you had any ideas, send it to him. So I came up with some, and I passed it on to Dave. And knowing why I was looking at this was, as I said, to kind of even out distribution so that the retired guys do get something. They don't get a cost of living allowance or anything like that. They don't get any benefit out of any of the other surpluses, which are substantial. But the board doesn't want to make a decision because they felt that we would compromise the IRS five-letter ruling and we'd be in trouble with the IRS. So the point was, let's go back to Ice Miller, who wrote this whole thing. You know, in the beginning, we didn't know squat about how to get rid of this extra money that we had. And it came up with the share plan or COLAs. And COLAs got kind of shut down and we came up with the share plan. So the IRS made their ruling at the suggestion of or request of us through Ice Miller. My question then, with respect to the being able to make distribution of the forfeiture money, which is specified one way or the other in the IRS plan. And you got this. My questions to Ice Miller. And question one is the proposed modification of this paragraph, in other words, the forfeitures, a violation of the IRS private letter rule. Nobody's going to know this better than. And by the way, all of this was answered by our attorney in that they didn't see any likelihood. They didn't feel that there would be any impact on the IRS in doing what we were talking about as forfeiture. The board chose that they weren't comfortable with that answer. They wanted an answer from a higher authority who was more involved with this, hence Ice Miller. So the one, you know, it does, even talking about this violate the IRS private letter ruling. Next. Can the Board of Trustees employ a redistribution process of forfeitures without violating the IRS law? Another question. Can the Board employ a 13th check concept to redistribute forfeitures without violating the IRS law? Another question. Is there a current IRS restriction on redistribution of established pension allocations to qualified retired personnel? Next, does the board have authority to distribute assets within established disciplines? Do you have any problem with any of those questions?
No.
Do you think this is something we could go to Ice Miller with?
Yes,
it is. Now we're back to where we were before. Ice Miller quoted us $4,500 to make a decision only on whether or not we could do this without violating the letter. Does not, at this time, say that this is what we're going to do. It says we can do if we want to do, or we can't do. So I request again that we go back to Ice Miller and get answers to these questions. And I'll make a motion that we do it. Do you have any questions or any comments on that?
No. Just as I said, I personally, from our perspective, it's highly unlikely that changing that forfeiture distribution method would have any impact on the on the private letter ruling, because it's not one of the material provisions that relates to the code requirements. requirements under 457, so I don't believe it would have any impact.
I know you'd like to get the answers. I mean, we've run over this the last three meetings or two meetings, and I feel like we're taking away from the actual monies that are designated for the future of this the corporation, of the plan. So basically, I mean, to put it bluntly, we're looking for a raise. I mean, an extra cash, an extra payment for the extra, or an extra month, correct? So, I mean, that's what we're looking for. That's what it is. The bottom line is we're trying to get a rate increase or an increase to the retirement fund. Like I said before, I haven't gotten a raise in 15 years on my pension, and I don't think we're obligated to do that. I think the monies that are there are for the future of the corporation, company, that the city could take any time. There's something else that the city council can input on as well. I mean, that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I would say no.
You would say no to what?
No, to spending an extra $5,000 to get the questions answered. I don't approve of it.
Well, administrative fee funds are different than regular funds, so like they put out so much per year in our budget for legal and stuff, so we can't use administrative funds for plan improvements. So I don't know if that helps you any, but
okay.
We can't
waste the money.
We can't, but it's not like because we didn't spend it, it's going back. You know what I mean? Because it's allocated administrative funds, so that's actually a separate budget. Is that correct? Right. Yes.
We budget for administrative costs, but whatever's not used goes back to the pension fund.
To the plan, okay.
Yes. So.
But we are, I mean, I know we're under budget what we were last year for legal fees, so we would have cushion in that legal budget if we wanted it. So.
I'm not in favor. I don't know. I just spend it. No, I know. I spend it. Well, I don't know. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I mean, I'm not opposed to sending it up to Indianapolis to see what they say. We're well under budget as far as the expense side of it is concerned. We have money in the budget to do it. I don't think it's going to hurt anything. And if it makes us a little smarter, I'm in favor of it. Okay. Am I in favor of a 13th check? That's another question. Because in my mind, I guess I look at forfeitures as being something that's deposited back into the fund for future benefits, not for current retirees. Okay. In that sense, it's kind of unusual, at least in my experience. And remember, I'm in the private sector. I'm not in the government sector. So that's just my take on it. But as far as asking the question that I want, makes me smarter, fine.
I think that I'm not opposed to asking for legal advice by any means. I agree, I think it makes us smarter. But I think if the answer, no matter what the response is from Ice Miller, even if it comes back positive or negative, if the answer to the second set of questions is going to be no from the board, then why waste the $5,000? You know, and I'm not trying to, you know, because you're right. You just heard two people say they're not for a 13th check. So if the ultimate goal is to find out how we distribute a 13th check, I think that we should all be on the same playing field as far as the 13th check. Like I said, I'm not opposed to going to get an answer, but would that answer change someone's mind? I think is the question. You know?
I don't know unless you ask the question. The whole thing might go away if I simply come back and say you can't do it.
Right.
Then there's nothing left. It's gone. But as long as it's hanging out there, you can't answer the second question because you got the barriers of the first question. Wow. If the ICE Mill goes back and says you can, then that this forfeiture thing will be proposed again, and then you vote yes or no. But you'll know what you're voting on.
Well, we'll know if it's legal or not.
Yeah.
That's what we'll know. I don't think the decision on whether we agree with the 13th check is that vague.
That's another issue, I would think.
Right. Right. So
whether you would employ the opportunity to do that.
Right.
Okay. But you have to vote no or yes on prior firefighters in the pension fund getting an increase. And that was an end run on COLA. You don't want to do COLA. Actually, it says we don't really want to do anything for retired people. And if we did do it, then the people who are active today would still benefit from it, because then someday you're going to be gone.
Absolutely. But I'm thinking that the stability of the plan itself, keeping the funds where they...
I see no question on the stability of the fund, but this fund is beyond belief.
Well, in 5 years, how do we know that?
Because we've got 15 years experience that said, 5 years is no problem. I made the motion.
There's nothing about this plan that is not unique, I will say that. But I think that, like they said, it's just not best practice or common practice for retirees to get benefits from current pension reform. You know what I mean? Like, in other private or public sector, you know? If we want to go for an answer to see what it is and entertain it, I'll second your motion, and then we can at least put something to bed because this will continue to come up for 16 weeks or 16 more months. So, and then we'll make an educated decision on moving forward or not, because it'll have to be an actuarial study anyway on the effect on the plan and the reserves and such. So,
I don't think so. What you're talking about is a redistribution process.
Yeah.
You're not talking about the health of the plan.
Sure.
So much money is going into one pot versus another, and you're talking about the long-term health of the plan,
right,
or to some degree, it's going to have an effect. Now, it's not effectless.
So we have a motion and a second. All in favor of just getting the investigative answers from the attorney?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right, motion carries. All right, any comments from the public?
No.
They left.
They left.
All right. They left way.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Sorry.
All right, all in favor. Thank you. Thank you.